Good morning. We're beginning our Mishnah Seder today with Masechet Moed Katan, Tractate Moed Katan. And before we do an introduction to this Masechet, to this Tractate, we'll do a quick general introduction to Mishnah. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu gave us the Torah at Sinai, and he went up to Sinai to receive it from Hashem, from God. And when Moshe then gave us the Torah, so Moshe received the written law together with the oral law. And this means that the Mishnah really dates back to the time the Torah was given, to the time Moshe Rabbein. And some of the Mishnah we have are the exact text that was in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, the exact oral law. And some of it evolved during the years as things became less clear, as the tradition was passed down. So there started being conflicting opinions as to what the halacha is in certain circumstances, and new Mishnayot were compiled. This continued till the time Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. If you look over here, we have a timeline. And you see the time of the Second Temple, the top of the page, 347 BCE, the time of the Great Assembly begins, and that's really the time of the Second Temple. And you see that the time of the Second Temple is a time of turmoil. You have the Greeks conquering in the land of Israel, the Torah is translated to Greek, the revolt of the Maccabeans, the miracle of Hanukkah, the Romans invade Israel, Herod the Great begins his rule, the time of Hillel and Shammai, which is about 100 years before the destruction of the Second Temple. The revolt against the revolt of the Jews against Rome begins 67 CE. Jerusalem is conquered by the Romans at 70 CE, and the Temple is destroyed by the Romans. So the period of the Second Temple was a time of turmoil. Even during the time when we had our own sovereignty, there was internal turmoil. There were constant civil war, and kings were wiping out whole towns, whole cities of Jews for fear that they were going to revolt against them. You had massive bloodshed going on throughout much of the Second Temple. And certainly after the Second Temple was destroyed, you had the rebellion of Bar Kokhba, and then you had the murder of the great sages, the ten sages, until finally we reached the generation of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who has exceptionally good relations with the Roman Emperor. And he recognizes that this is a unique period, and he has to capitalize on the fact that he has peace in his time and that he could get the rabbis together. And when they put all the rabbis together in his yeshiva, they compile the Mishnah, and for the first time the oral law is written down and published, and they give out a text of Mishnah, which is what we have to this day, which everyone is going to have. Until Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi's time, every person used to compile his own version of the Mishnah and keep it hidden. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi initiated this concept that we're going to mass produce and publicize the oral law, and we're going to have one version which we're going to accept. Yeah?
Even though there's a lot of political turmoil, there was also a time of great Torah learning too, no? Or that the turmoil came out, or the Torah learning suffered from the turmoil as well?
The Torah learning suffered greatly because the Greeks had decrees against Torah learning and the Romans had decrees against Torah learning. So you had a situation where you couldn't put together the yeshivas and you couldn't have people studying with the masses like you had in the past. And that caused the tradition to suffer as well. And it caused the rise of Talmidei Chachamim to suffer as well. Because you couldn't have people studying like you had before. In Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi's time, you again had the ability to put together a big yeshiva and have a lot of people studying together and have people compare their tradition and make sure we get one clear tradition. So Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi recognized that this was an exception. This wasn't a new norm. It's very unique when a person can recognize his time period in the span of history. And that's what Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi did. He recognized that he can't count on the Jews again having this peace and tranquility, and he compiled the Mishnah. We are studying Masechet Moed Katan, which shows up at the end of Seder Moed. We know that the Mishnah was divided into six starim, six segments, and the first one being Sraim, discussing all the plantings and the laws of the plantings. And the second one is Moed. Moed discusses the holidays and the set times in the Jewish calendar. And what we're studying is the Masechet, the tractate, which is called Moed Katan, the small set times in the calendar. And our Masechet primarily deals with Chol HaMoed. We know that on Pesach and on Sukkot we have 7 days. The first day and the last day are like every Yom Tov, where we don't do any labor and we have special prayers in Shul. And then we have the days in between, which we call Chol HaMoed, and in the Mishnah is going to be called Moed, the set time. And those days are of less stringency. We know we drive on them, we have a shorter prayer in shul, we add musaf, we read in the Torah, but it's less holiness. And our Masechet, the first half deals with what are the laws of this period, this time between that has some laws of the holiday and some leniencies like a weekday. Now, the Torah describes the holidays of Pesach and Sukkot as holidays of 7 days. Should have holidays for 7 days. And then the Torah says, but the exceptional holiday is on the first and the seventh. So that leaves us with a question. Is the first and the seventh the holiday, or are all seven the holiday? And being that we have this contradiction in the verses, so what our sages derived was that the days in between have some of the stringencies of the holiday and have some of the leniencies of the weekday, because in some respect the Pasuk describes them as a holiday, and in other respects the Pasuk seems to say that the holiday is only the first and the last day. Let's begin the first Mishnah, which discusses what we're allowed to do b'moed, which is, moed is the term we use for chol ha-moed in the Mishnah, those days in between. So the Mishnah says, mashkin, one may water bet ha-shlachin, a field that is thirsty, that needs water, needs to be watered on a continuous basis, b'moed, during the chol ha-moed, during those days in between. Uva Shvi'it, and the same thing is true on the seventh year of Shemitah. We know we're limited as to what work we could do in the field on Shemitah. So if we have a field that desperately needs to be watered on a continuous basis, we're allowed to water it during Shemitah. How do we define what is permitted to do on Chol HaMoed? So our sages said that Davar HaAved, something that if you don't do it, you'll lose from your money or your monetary value on Chol HaMoed, you're allowed to do it, assuming that it doesn't require extra work, assuming that it's not something that's very difficult, that's going to require toilless labor to attain. So our Mishnah says, if you have a field that needs to be watered every day, and if you don't water it, so the field is going to be damaged. So there, that's called Davar HaAved. You're going to lose from the value of the field now if you don't water it. It's not for the sake of profit, but rather not to lose from the value of the field. So then the Mishnah says you're allowed to water that kind of field on Chol HaMoed. And the same thing is true, you're allowed to water it on Shvi'it. Now that field is called Bet HaShlachin, a field that's thirsty, that's tired. And really, it comes from the Aramaic word Mishalhei. Mishalhei means worn out, tired, thirsty. And they changed it, the hei to ches, instead of a field of shlachin, a tired, worn out field, they changed it to shlachin. Ches and hei in Hebrew are sometimes interchangeable. So bit shlachin means a field that is tired and thirsty and needs to be constantly watered. A field that's settled and doesn't need to be watered on a consistent basis is called Bet HaBal, a field that is more settled. Like Baal, a husband settles down with his wife. The verse describes a husband and his wife, the land of Israel, as being settled by its inhabitants by the Jewish people, as Kiv al bachu betuda, as a young lad consummates his marriage with his virgin wife, Yiv aluch banaich. God says, so too your sons, O land of Israel, will come and consummate. They'll inhabit and become settled in the land of Israel. So based on that verse, we say that a field that's inhabited, that has people living in it, and not has people living in it, but rather is settled. It has its source of water from the rains, that's enough, so that's called Bet Abad. So our Mishnah says you're allowed to water a field that's thirsty, that needs to be constantly watered, and the question is going to be, how do you water it? Meaning, you could water it by going to the well 500 times and drawing water. And you could water it with irrigation ditches. And the Mishnah is going to state that you're allowed to water it from an irrigation ditch, from some kind of spring that's running through the field. But there's a difference between if you just dug that irrigation ditch 2 days before the holiday, and then you have to worry that maybe it's going to cave in, and then you'll work to dig it out, or if it's been this way, this is the way you water the field for a while now. So you know that it's not going to require extra work to make it work. So our Mishnah is of the opinion that you're allowed to water this field ben mimayan shiyatza betechila, regardless of whether it was mayan, a spring that just now came out, that just now you dug that irrigation ditch, and you have to concern yourself that maybe it's going to require extra work, some fixing. Certainly you're allowed to water it from a spring that's not new. Yatza means came out, but chila, fresh, it's starting now. So if you have an irrigation ditch that's been there for weeks now, so you know that it's not problematic, for sure you're allowed to water the field from there. Avalen mashkin, but one is not permitted to water the field, lo mimeag shamim, not from rainwater. Because we're concerned he's going to start drawing from the rainwater, then he'll end up drawing from deep wells, velo mimei kilon, not from water that's in a pit, ve'en osinu giot lekfanim, and one cannot dig around the grapevines. They used to dig around the grapevines so that water would amass there, and that was a way of watering the grapevines. The Mishnah says one is not allowed to do that on Chol HaMoed. So let's summarize what we see. Who wants to summarize?
Can I have a question?
Yeah.
By not watering from the rains, it means water stored during the time of the rain? It's obviously not saying that we can't let the rain fall in the field.
No, it means that they used to have work. They used to have
water trapping systems.
Right. So from the water trapping systems, you couldn't water the field.
These are like borot, or
this is like borot, but it seems like they were easier to water from. But as you'd water from them, the water level would go down,
mm-hmm.
and you'd have to eventually use a bucket to draw the water from them. So the Mishnah is concerned that if you start watering from this rainwater, you'll end up being in the middle of watering the field, and you'll see you need to go use the bucket, and then that's extra hard work.
Mm-hmm.
So we say, we allow you to water your field on Chol HaMoed, if your field really needs it. But that it has to be in a fashion that's not tircham ruba, extra toil. It has to be relatively easy.
And who decides whether it's irretrievable loss? Like it's
a lot of what we're going to learn is to define that term. What does it mean? It doesn't have to be irretrievable loss. It has to be that you're going to lose something by it. If you're not going to water the field, then it's going to damage the crops. So who wants to summarize the Mishnah? I'll summarize it, and someone else will do it. Go ahead.
Okay. So the first Mishnah tells us about what work is permitted specifically on Chol HaMoed, understanding that there is a prohibition. So what is permitted? That and the example gives is that of a field where if it's not watered, damage will accrue to the crops. In such a case, you can water it. It sets limits of work. You can do work to preserve the field. You can water it from irrigation ditches, which is a lot of work. It's a decent amount of work. But ultimately, you're letting the water do its you're changing the course of water, but letting the water do its natural thing, as opposed to taking water from you actively moving water from one place to another. Water that's either that you've accrued or from a well. So you can help water to you can help natural things to move the way you want them, as opposed to actively taking a role to change where the water is.
So that's one way which we might have understood the Mishnah, that this is the defining factor, whether you've moved the water or not. But I think that from the continuation, we're going to have a little bit of a difficulty by going at this definition. The definition that I think we're supposed to get from the Mishnah is it going to be extra toilless work or not? Because sometimes we're going to see you're allowed to water a field, and you're taking it with buckets, but it's not considered toilless because you have the buckets right there and the water is right there, and it's a small amount of work. And sometimes watering from the field, the Gemara brings an opinion that says you're allowed to water with an irrigation ditch only if it's been there for a while. But if it's a new irrigation ditch, then we're concerned it's going to cave in and you'll end up digging it out again. So there's no extra work right now, but we see a strong potential for extra work, toilless work. So the definition that we're supposed to get from the Mishnah is that you're allowed to do work for Devar HaVed, or something that you'll lose if you don't do it, and you have to make sure that that work is not extra toilless. The Mishnah ends up with the halacha that you're not allowed to do extra dig around the gifanim, the grapevines, to let water master. The next Mishnah, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was a big Talmud Chacham who became the Nasi at the ripe old age of 18. And then for the continuation of his life, he was partners for Nasi. There were two Nasiim, and he'd give the drasha 1 week, and for the next 2 weeks, Rabbi Gamliel would give the drasha. They were both Nasiim at the same time. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says the following. En osin et ha'ama batechila v'moed uv'ashvi'it. One cannot dig a new ama on Chol HaMoed or on Shvi'is on the seventh year, on the year of Shemitah, when you're supposed to lay the land fallow. Now, what is an ama? So, an ama is some kind of major irrigation ditch, which is a hand width by a hand width, width and depth. And that's why it's called an ama. Ama is a hand length, the arm length. So that's how wide they'd make this irrigation ditch, and that's how deep they'd make it. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, if you haven't had this wide irrigation ditch running through the field beforehand, we're not going to allow you to set it up on Chol HaMoed, because that's extra work. And the same thing is true on the year of Shemitah. You're not allowed to dig through your field, this wide irrigation ditch. Everyone sees you digging through your field. Looks like you're doing extra work. You're fixing up the field on the year of Shemitah. Yeah.
Also, I imagine my understanding how irrigation ditches work, something like an ama is part of the larger infrastructure of irrigation ditches.
That's an excellent point. What you're saying is it's a strong point. Whether it's correct or not is a matter of opinion among Rishonim. Some Rishonim say exactly what you're saying, and others say slightly different. But yeah, the ama seems to be a wider irrigation ditch from which smaller ones would run out. That's what it seems like. Yeah, that's true. Good point. So Rav Elazar ben Azariah says you're not allowed to make a new ama on Chol HaMoed or on Shemitah. V'chachamim omrim, and the sages disagreed with Rav Elazar ben Azariah. They said, osin et ha'ama batchila b'shvit, we let you make a new ama during the year of Shemitah. If you want to dig that, so we're not worried people are going to see you digging an irrigation ditch, they'll think you're fixing up your field. You're not digging in the field, you're making an irrigation ditch. That's not a problem on Shvi'is. Umtaknin etam kulkalot. And if you had an irrigation ditch that got ruined, you're allowed to fix it b'moed during Chol HaMoed. So our sages are saying two laws. One is you're allowed to make a new one on Shemitah, and the second is you're allowed to fix a broken one on Chol HaMoed. Now, question: what was Rav Elazar ben Azariah's opinion about fixing a broken one on Chol HaMoed? He didn't say. All he said was you can't make a new one on Chol HaMoed. But Elazar ben Azariah said you can't make a new ama, a new wide irrigation ditch, on Chol HaMoed or on Shemitah. And our sages say you could make a new one on Shemitah and you could fix a broken one on Chol HaMoed. Well, he never spoke about fixing a broken one on Chol HaMoed. Yeah.
Well, it seems that he's talking about the amount of work, whereas they're talking about the purpose of the work. He's talking, because fixing an irrigation ditch and digging a new ditch might be theoretically the same amount, the same kind of work.
No, because we say fixing one is that you have an irrigation ditch there and some of the earth fell in. So digging out a little bit of earth that fell in isn't like digging a whole irrigation ditch. It's much less work. A, because the earth that fell in is soft and is ready to be taken out. And B, because most of the ditch is there. ומתכנין את קלקולי המים שברשות הרבים. They used to have public pits filled with water, and sometimes rocks and stuff fell in. So you fix that on Chol HaMoed, בחוטטין אותן. And if you have to take out, you're allowed to fix the pits and take out לחטות, is to take a stick and clean out the rocks. In modern Hebrew, you rarely hear this word. You only hear it when someone's picking his nose. So they say chotet ba. He's digging around, clearing things out of his nose. But in ancient Hebrew, in the Mishnah, lachtot means they take sticks and drag out the rocks from these public wells. Umtaknin et haderachim, and our sages instituted that during Chol HaMoed is the time when we'd fix the public paths, the public roads, ve'et ha'chovot, and the streets, ve'et mikvot ha'mayim, and the mikveh, the water where men and women immerse themselves to become pure, ve'osin kol tzochei rabim, and we do everything that the public needs on Chol HaMoed. Why is that? Because on Chol HaMoed no one's working, right? You're not allowed to do work unless you're going to incur a loss by not doing it. So everyone's off. So then it's easy to find cheap labor. And our sages said, if you could find cheap labor, then the courts are responsible for taking care of the public needs. And they're going to use public funds for that. So they should do it when they could get cheap labor. So they said, on Chol HaMoed, when people are off, take the people and have them fix what the public needs. And we put signs on the graves. Now remember, they always had to know where there was a grave, because if you walk over a grave, you become defiled, you become tameh. So they used to pour white seed. Seed in English is
lime.
Yeah, I guess. So that was a sign that there was a grave there. So those signs got worn off in the rain. So they'd send people around to put new seed, and that's mitzainim. We make signs et hakvarot by the graves. V'yotzina lakilaim, and the courts would send out their messengers to check everyone's field to make sure they weren't growing kilaim, they weren't mixing the different seeds to grow kilaim. What's kilaim in English?
Forbidden mixtures?
Hybrids, yeah. Mixing the plants so that you have different things grown. So what did our Mishnah say? Our Mishnah began with two opinions. Rav Lezbin, as Aryeh had said, you're not allowed to make a new wide irrigation ditch called an amma on Chol HaMoed and on Shemitah. And our sages said, on Shemitah you are allowed to make this new wide irrigation ditch, and on Chol HaMoed you're allowed to fix an irrigation ditch that got ruined. And then we had a long listing of things that the courts are responsible for fixing for the public, and they do that on Chol HaMoed. We said, be it the wells of water, taking out the stones from the wells, the paths, the roads, the mikvahs, everything the public needs, putting signs on the graves, all that you could do on Chol HaMoed. And also, the Bezin would send out their messengers regarding Kilayim. Yeah.
So from the road work and things like that, are we to understand those also again as not hard labor?
Oh, good question. No. So for public use, we permit even hard labor. So they just said that at some point they had a stream that everyone used to drink from, and the stream got filled with branches and stuff, and it required the whole community going out to clear the stream so that the water came through well. So our sages said, on Chol HaMoed, now everyone is off, now we all go work. And it was hard work, you had to get the whole community to do it. And there are other examples where we say that for the public service you could do even hard work.